Clinical and performance applications of neurofeedback are supported by a growing body of research that supports its efficacy. Evidence-Based Practice in Biofeedback and Neurofeedback, 4th edition, provides a detailed review of these studies. This unit summarizes representative randomized controlled trials, RCTs, and quasi-experimental studies, which provide the strongest evidence of efficacy. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, ADHD. Diagnostic criteria. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, ADHD, is a complex neurodevelopmental disorder marked by patterns of inattention and/or hyperactivity impulsivity that disrupt daily functioning and development. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-5, refined its diagnostic criteria to enhance accuracy and clinical utility. The revised criteria expanded the examples of symptom presentation, raised the age limit for symptom onset from 7 to 12 years, and reduced the number of required symptoms for adolescents and adults. These updates acknowledge developmental variability and aim to ensure that ADHD is diagnosed based on its broader clinical spectrum rather than restrictive parameters. ADHD's diagnostic framework categorizes symptoms into three primary presentations: predominantly inattentive, predominantly hyperactive impulsive, and combined. Inattention encompasses difficulties in sustaining focus, frequently losing items, forgetfulness, and careless mistakes. Hyperactivity impulsivity includes excessive fidgeting, interrupting conversations, and an inability to remain seated when expected. These symptoms must persist for at least 6 months, occur in at least 2 different settings, e.g., home and school, and result in significant impairment in social, academic, or occupational functioning. Clinicians are encouraged to consider the cultural and environmental context of behaviors, which helps avoid biases in diagnosis and ensures appropriate interventions. The importance of accurate diagnosis is emphasized by the pervasive and lasting effects of ADHD on an individual's life. In childhood, symptoms can lead to academic challenges, difficulties in peer relationships, and familial strain. If untreated, ADHD often continues into adolescence and adulthood, where it may manifest as challenges in maintaining employment, managing relationships, and engaging in social responsibilities. This underscores the need for early detection and evidence-based interventions that address core symptoms and associated impairments. Demographics. ADHD is one of the most commonly diagnosed neurodevelopmental disorders in children. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that approximately 11% of U.S. children aged 4 to 17 years have received an ADHD diagnosis, with rates as high as 20% among high school-aged boys. This striking gender disparity is attributed to differences in symptom presentation. Boys tend to exhibit more externalizing behaviors, such as hyperactivity and impulsivity, which are readily observable and likely to prompt referrals for evaluation. In contrast, girls often present with inattentive symptoms, such as daydreaming or difficulty sustaining focus, which may be less disruptive and therefore overlooked. This gender difference extends to the comorbid conditions frequently associated with ADHD. Boys with ADHD are more likely to be diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder or conduct disorder, while girls exhibit higher rates of comorbid anxiety and depression. Such disparities highlight the necessity for clinicians to consider ADHD as a potential underlying factor in cases where girls present with internalizing symptoms or emotional dysregulation. These differences also inform treatment approaches, as boys and girls may require tailored interventions that address their unique profiles of strengths and challenges. The societal and economic burden of ADHD is substantial. Nearly half of children diagnosed with ADHD experience significant learning difficulties, struggle to communicate effectively, and face challenges in social interactions. Sleep difficulty and behavioral problems are common, with approximately 80% of children engaging in misbehavior, often at a severe level. These challenges can persist into adolescence and adulthood, leading to long-term implications for educational attainment, career prospects, and quality of life. Early and effective intervention is therefore essential in mitigating these outcomes and supporting individuals with ADHD across their lifespan. Neurofeedback studies. Neurofeedback, NFB, has emerged as a promising intervention for ADHD, supported by a robust body of research demonstrating its efficacy and specificity. NFB is a non-invasive therapeutic approach that utilizes real-time monitoring of brainwave activity to help individuals self-regulate their neural patterns. This intervention is grounded in the principles of operant conditioning, where individuals receive feedback, e.g., auditory or visual cues, to reinforce desirable brainwave patterns and inhibit maladaptive ones. The evidence-based practice in biofeedback and neurofeedback, 4th edition, rates neurofeedback for ADHD as efficacious and specific, a designation based on extensive randomized controlled trials and meta-analyses. Common NFB protocols for ADHD include theta/beta ratio training, sensorimotor rhythm, SMR, training, and slow cortical potential, SCP, training. Theta/beta ratio training seeks to decrease slow wave activity, theta, and increase fast wave activity, beta, addressing the common EEG pattern observed in individuals with ADHD. SMR training enhances the amplitude of sensorimotor rhythms associated with calm and focused states, while SCP training targets cortical arousal regulation by modulating positive and negative shifts in cortical potentials. Seminal studies have established the efficacy of these protocols. Luber et al., 1995, demonstrated that theta/beta ratio training led to significant improvements in intelligence scores, Wiskar, and attention measures, TOVA. Similarly, Rossiter and LaVac, 1995, found that neurofeedback was as effective as Ritalin in reducing inattention, impulsivity, and response variability. Longitudinal research by Luber, 1995, highlighted the durability of neurofeedback outcomes, with improvements in attention maintained for up to a decade. These findings form the foundation for neurofeedback's high efficacy rating in treating ADHD. Recent large-scale trials have further substantiated neurofeedback's role as an evidence-based intervention. Jevonsalben et al., 2009, conducted a multi-site randomized controlled trial with over 100 children, demonstrating that neurofeedback outperformed computerized attention training in reducing ADHD symptoms. These gains were sustained at 6-month follow-ups, highlighting the long-term benefits of neurofeedback. Additional studies, such as those by Sherlin et al., 2010, have underscored its safety and effectiveness, arguing for its equivalence to stimulant medication in addressing inattention and impulsivity. Clinical efficacy. The designation of neurofeedback as efficacious and specific by evidence-based practice reflects its robust evidence base and clinical applicability. This classification requires consistent positive outcomes across multiple high-quality studies, demonstrating efficacy beyond placebo effects and equivalence or superiority to alternative treatments. Neurofeedback meets these criteria through its demonstrated ability to reduce core ADHD symptoms, including inattention, impulsivity, and hyperactivity, and its long-term sustainability of benefits. Neurofeedback's efficacy is particularly notable in its ability to address inattention and impulsivity, symptoms that often impede academic and social functioning. Research indicates that neurofeedback not only matches stimulant medication in effectiveness, but also offers unique advantages, such as fewer side effects and sustained gains after treatment cessation. For example, studies by Monastro et al., 2002, revealed that children who received neurofeedback in combination with stimulant medication maintained their performance gains even after discontinuing medication, a finding not observed in the medication-only group. Despite its demonstrated benefits, neurofeedback is not without limitations. Treatment outcomes can vary based on factors such as age, baseline symptom severity, and adherence to training protocols. Moreover, achieving clinical improvements typically requires a substantial time commitment, with most studies recommending 20 to 50 sessions. These considerations underscore the need for individualized treatment plans and ongoing research to optimize neurofeedback protocols for diverse populations. The recognition of neurofeedback as a Level 1 intervention by the American Academy of Pediatrics, 2012, signifies its integration into the mainstream spectrum of ADHD treatments. This endorsement highlights its empirical support and utility as a non-pharmacological alternative or complement to traditional interventions. As research continues to refine its applications, neurofeedback holds promise as a cornerstone in the multidisciplinary management of ADHD, offering hope for improved outcomes and quality of life for individuals and families affected by this pervasive condition. Mild closed head injuries and traumatic brain injury, TBI. Diagnostic criteria: mild closed head injuries and traumatic brain injury, TBI, are terms used to describe brain injuries resulting from external mechanical forces, such as a blow to the head, rapid acceleration or deceleration, or sudden contact with a blunt object. TBI is classified based on severity, with mild TBI encompassing concussion-level injuries that may not cause visible structural damage on neuroimaging. Diagnostic criteria for mild TBI, outlined by organizations such as the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, include brief loss of consciousness, confusion, memory disturbances, or other neurological symptoms lasting up to 24 hours. The classification of TBI emphasizes its heterogeneity, ranging from mild cases that may resolve within days to severe injuries that result in lasting cognitive, emotional, and physical impairments. Diagnosing mild TBI, MTBI, can be challenging because symptoms such as headache, fatigue, and difficulty concentrating overlap with other conditions, such as stress or anxiety. Additionally, the delayed onset of symptoms, particularly cognitive and emotional effects, necessitates careful monitoring and comprehensive evaluation. Day of injury observations made by trained health professionals are vital when diagnosing MTBI. Demographics. Traumatic brain injuries are a significant public health concern, with approximately 1.9 million incidents reported annually in the United States. Mild TBI accounts for the majority of these cases, often resulting from falls, motor vehicle accidents, sports-related injuries, or assaults. Demographically, older adults and young children are at increased risk for TBI due to falls, while adolescents and young adults are more likely to sustain injuries related to sports or vehicular accidents. Men are statistically more likely to experience TBI than women, potentially due to higher engagement in high-risk activities. The long-term consequences of mild TBI are sometimes substantial, with a significant proportion of individuals experiencing post-concussion syndrome, PCS, a condition characterized by persistent symptoms such as headaches, dizziness, and cognitive difficulties. The socioeconomic impact is also considerable, with costs related to healthcare, lost productivity, and long-term disability affecting individuals, families, and society. Given the prevalence and impact of mild TBI, effective interventions are critical for improving outcomes and reducing the burden of injury. Neurofeedback studies. Neurofeedback has gained attention as a non-invasive intervention for persistent symptoms after mild TBI, focusing on improving cognitive function, attention, and emotional regulation by training individuals to regulate their brainwave activity. This approach leverages real-time EEG data to help patients increase desired brainwave frequencies and decrease maladaptive patterns. The evidence-based practice in biofeedback and neurofeedback, 4th edition, rates neurofeedback for mild TBI as probably efficacious, reflecting the substantial body of research supporting its effectiveness in treating core symptoms such as attention. Early neurofeedback studies demonstrated promising outcomes in TBI rehabilitation. Ayers, 1995, reported that neurofeedback training led to significant improvements in cognitive function and attention among patients with mild TBI. These findings were supported by controlled studies such as Keller, 2001, which showed that beta-frequency neurofeedback training significantly enhanced attentional performance compared to control conditions. Additionally, Schoenberger et al., 2001, demonstrated that neurofeedback reduced cognitive fatigue and depressive symptoms, common challenges for individuals with mild TBI. Recent research has further solidified neurofeedback's efficacy in managing mild TBI. Thornton and Carmody, 2013, reported notable gains in auditory and visual memory among participants receiving neurofeedback training, highlighting its role in addressing cognitive deficits. Walker et al., 2002, found that 88% of mild TBI patients experienced over 50% improvement in EEG coherence following neurofeedback, with many resuming work after completing training. These studies collectively underscore the utility of neurofeedback in addressing the complex symptoms associated with mild TBI. Clinical efficacy. The classification of neurofeedback as probably efficacious for mild TBI by in the evidence-based practice review reflects its demonstrated ability to improve cognitive, emotional, and physical symptoms such as headache in this population. This designation is based on a growing body of evidence from randomized controlled trials and longitudinal studies. Neurofeedback protocols for TBI typically involve training to decrease slow wave activity, theta, and increase beta frequency activity associated with alertness and focus. Advanced techniques such as Z-score training and low-resolution electromagnetic tomography, LORETTA, training have further enhanced neurofeedback's precision and efficacy. Clinical outcomes of neurofeedback for mild TBI include reduced symptom severity, improved attention and memory, and enhanced quality of life. Participants also report reductions in anxiety and depression, which are common comorbidities in TBI populations. Importantly, neurofeedback offers a non-invasive alternative to pharmacological interventions, minimizing the risk of side effects and providing long-lasting benefits. This makes it particularly appealing for individuals seeking holistic approaches to recovery. Despite its efficacy, neurofeedback is not without limitations. The variability in treatment outcomes highlights the need for individualized protocols tailored to patients' specific symptoms and neurophysiological profiles. Additionally, the time-intensive nature of neurofeedback, requiring multiple sessions to achieve significant improvements, may pose barriers to access for some individuals. Ongoing research aims to refine protocols and optimize the efficiency of neurofeedback interventions for TBI. The designation of neurofeedback as probably efficacious by evidence-based practice underscores its role as a valuable tool in TBI rehabilitation. As the evidence base grows, neurofeedback is poised to become a standard component of comprehensive TBI care, offering hope for improved outcomes and quality of life for individuals affected by these complex injuries. Substance Use Disorder, SUD. Diagnostic criteria. Substance Use Disorder, SUD, is a chronic and relapsing condition characterized by compulsive substance seeking and use despite harmful consequences. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-5, defines SUD as a spectrum of behavioral, cognitive, and physiological symptoms indicating the inability to control substance use. This framework identifies 11 criteria, including increased tolerance, withdrawal symptoms, unsuccessful attempts to reduce use, and continued use despite interpersonal or physical problems. The severity of SUD is categorized as mild, moderate, or severe based on the number of criteria met. The diagnostic criteria emphasize the behavioral and neurobiological components of SUD. Key features include impaired control, where individuals experience cravings and fail to limit substance intake, and risky use, and where substance use persists despite physical danger or social harm. SUD is also associated with disruptions in the brain's reward system, including heightened sensitivity to substance-related cues and diminished sensitivity to natural rewards. These changes underpin the compulsive nature of the disorder and highlight the need for interventions that address both neurophysiological and behavioral aspects of addiction. Demographics. Substance use disorder affects millions of individuals globally, contributing to significant health, social, and economic burdens. In the United States, alcohol and illicit drug use are leading contributors to morbidity and mortality. The National Survey on Drug Use and Health, NSDUH, reports that nearly 20% of adults meet the criteria for SUD at some point in their lives, with rates of alcohol use disorder surpassing those for illicit drug use disorders. Populations at heightened risk include young adults, individuals with mental health conditions, and those with a family history of addiction. Demographic disparities in SUD prevalence and outcomes are notable. Men are more likely to develop SUD than women, but women with SUD often experience faster progression and more severe consequences, a phenomenon referred to as telescoping. Adolescents and young adults are particularly vulnerable, as their developing brains are more susceptible to the neurobiological effects of substances. Additionally, Socioeconomic factors, such as unemployment and limited access to healthcare, exacerbate the risk and impact of SUD. These disparities highlight the need for tailored prevention and intervention strategies. Neurofeedback studies. Neurofeedback, NFB, has emerged as a promising intervention for SUD, particularly for addressing the neurobiological underpinnings of addiction. This modality uses real-time EEG data to train individuals to regulate their brainwave activity, targeting dysregulated neural networks associated with craving, impulse control, and emotional regulation. Evidence-based practice in biofeedback and neurofeedback, 4th edition, rates neurofeedback for SUD as probably efficacious for certain protocols, including alpha-theta training, and possibly efficacious for others, such as connectivity-based training. Alpha-theta neurofeedback is one of the most extensively studied protocols for SUD. This method trains individuals to increase alpha, 8 to 13 Hz, and theta, 4 to 7 Hz, activity, especially in the 6 to 10 Hz range, while reducing high beta activity, promoting a state of relaxation and introspection. The Peniston-Kolkoski protocol, a multimodal intervention incorporating alpha-theta neurofeedback with guided imagery and autogenic training, has demonstrated significant success in reducing substance use and promoting long-term abstinence. Alpha-theta training has been a useful complement to other treatment approaches, for example, reducing treatment dropout and improving maintenance of sobriety. Early studies by Peniston and Kolkoski, 1990, reported that 80% of individuals treated with this protocol maintained sobriety for 2 years, compared to none in the control group. More recent studies have expanded on these findings. Scott et al., 2005, demonstrated that the Scott-Kaiser protocol, which combines ADHD-targeted neurofeedback with alpha-theta training, significantly improved retention and abstinence rates in patients with stimulant and cannabis dependence. This approach addresses the dual challenges of comorbid ADHD symptoms and addiction, which often co-occur in SUD populations. The protocol's effectiveness has contributed to its classification as probably efficacious by evidence-based practice. Clinical efficacy. The designation of neurofeedback methods as probably efficacious and possibly efficacious for SUD reflects a robust evidence base derived from multiple randomized controlled trials and longitudinal studies. These classifications indicate that neurofeedback has demonstrated efficacy beyond placebo effects and offers measurable benefits in clinical settings. For example, alpha-theta training has been shown to enhance emotional regulation, reduce cravings, and improve quality of life. Additionally, neurofeedback's non-invasive nature and minimal side effects make it an appealing option for individuals seeking alternatives to pharmacological treatments. The clinical outcomes associated with neurofeedback for SUD are particularly compelling. Participants often report reductions in anxiety and depression, improved sleep quality, and increased self-efficacy. These benefits extend beyond symptom management, fostering the resilience and emotional stability necessary for sustained recovery. For instance, Bodenhammer Davis and Calloway, 2004, found that participants who completed alpha-theta neurofeedback maintained abstinence and demonstrated lower rates of rearrest and probation violations compared to controls, highlighting the intervention's role in supporting long-term recovery. While neurofeedback shows significant promise, its limitations must be acknowledged. Treatment outcomes can vary based on factors such as individual neurophysiological profiles, the severity of SUD, and adherence to training protocols. Additionally, neurofeedback often requires a substantial time commitment, with most protocols recommending 20 to 50 sessions. These challenges underscore the need for individualized treatment plans and ongoing research to optimize the efficiency and accessibility of neurofeedback interventions. The possibly efficacious rating for connectivity-based neurofeedback reflects the nascent state of research in this area. Emerging studies suggest that targeting specific neural circuits implicated in addiction, such as those involving the prefrontal cortex and reward pathways, may enhance the precision and effectiveness of neurofeedback. However, further research is needed to establish standardized protocols and validate outcomes across diverse populations. In conclusion, neurofeedback represents a valuable tool in the multidisciplinary treatment of substance use disorder. Its evidence-based ratings of probably efficacious and possibly efficacious underscore its potential to address the complex neurobiological and behavioral challenges of addiction. As research continues to refine protocols and expand the evidence base, neurofeedback is poised to play an increasingly prominent role in SUD treatment, offering hope for improved outcomes and quality of life for individuals and families navigating the challenges of addiction. Epilepsy. Diagnostic criteria. Epilepsy is a chronic neurological disorder characterized by recurrent, unprovoked seizures resulting from abnormal electrical activity in the brain. Seizures are classified into generalized, affecting both hemispheres, and focal, originating in a specific area of the brain. Diagnostic criteria for epilepsy require at least two unprovoked seizures occurring more than 24 hours apart, or a single unprovoked seizure with a high probability of recurrence due to underlying risk factors. Seizures are further categorized based on clinical manifestations, such as motor, tonic-clonic, or non-motor, absence, events, and altered awareness during the episode. Accurate diagnosis of epilepsy relies on a combination of clinical history, neuroimaging, and electrophysiological data. Electroencephalography, EEG, is essential for identifying patterns of epileptiform activity, which provide insights into the type and location of seizures. However, a high percentage of patients with epilepsy show no EEG abnormalities. Advanced imaging techniques, such as magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, help identify structural abnormalities that may contribute to seizure activity. Diagnosing epilepsy can be complex, particularly in cases of focal seizures or seizures with subtle symptoms, underscoring the importance of specialized assessment and long-term monitoring. Demographics. Epilepsy affects approximately 1% of the global population, with a slightly higher prevalence in low and middle-income countries due to limited access to healthcare and increased exposure to risk factors, such as perinatal injuries and infectious diseases. In the United States, an estimated 3.4 million individuals live with active epilepsy. While epilepsy can occur at any age, it is most common in young children and older adults, reflecting the vulnerability of developing and aging brains. Socioeconomic factors play a significant role in epilepsy management and outcomes. Individuals with epilepsy often face stigma, discrimination, and barriers to education and employment, which can exacerbate the condition's psychosocial impact. The economic burden is also considerable, with direct costs including medical care and indirect costs related to lost productivity. These challenges highlight the need for comprehensive interventions that address medical, psychological, and social aspects of epilepsy. Neurofeedback studies. Neurofeedback, NFB, has emerged as a promising adjunctive treatment for epilepsy, leveraging operant conditioning principles to train individuals to regulate their brainwave activity. Evidence-based practice in biofeedback and neurofeedback, 4th edition, classifies certain neurofeedback protocols as efficacious for epilepsy, while others are rated as probably efficacious or not empirically supported. These ratings reflect the robustness of evidence supporting each protocol's effectiveness and clinical applicability, although some forms of epilepsy, with motor symptoms, may be more responsive to neurofeedback than others. Sensorimotor rhythm, SMR, neurofeedback is the most extensively studied protocol for epilepsy. This approach trains individuals to increase SMR activity, 12 to 15 Hz, while inhibiting theta, 4 to 7 Hz, beta, greater than 20 Hz, and epileptiform spikes. Early studies by Sturman et al., 1977, demonstrated that SMR neurofeedback reduced seizure frequency by more than 50% in most participants, with some achieving complete seizure control. These findings have been replicated in multiple studies, establishing SMR neurofeedback as an efficacious intervention for generalized tonic-clonic seizures. Slow cortical potential, SCP, neurofeedback is another protocol with substantial evidence supporting its use in epilepsy. SCP training involves teaching individuals to modulate cortical excitability by increasing positive SCP shifts, which are associated with reduced neuronal firing. Elbert et al., 1991, conducted a randomized controlled trial demonstrating that SCP neurofeedback significantly reduced seizure frequency in individuals with drug-resistant epilepsy compared to alpha training controls. Evidence-based practice rates SCP neurofeedback as probably efficacious, acknowledging its potential to complement pharmacological treatments. Clinical efficacy. The efficacious rating for SMR neurofeedback is based on decades of research demonstrating consistent and clinically significant outcomes. Meta-analyses, such as that by Tan et al., 2009, have reported an average seizure reduction of over 50% in individuals undergoing SMR training, with improvements often persisting for years post-treatment. These results highlight the durability of neurofeedback's benefits, making it a valuable option for those with refractory epilepsy or potentially, with physician input, to reduce side effect-inducing medication. The probably efficacious classification for SCP neurofeedback reflects promising, yet less extensive, evidence. While SCP training has shown comparable seizure reductions to SMR training in some studies, the smaller sample sizes and methodological variability warrant further research to strengthen its evidence base. SCP neurofeedback's focus on modulating cortical excitability offers a unique mechanism of action that may be particularly beneficial for individuals with specific seizure types or patterns. Connectivity-based neurofeedback, designed to optimize communication between brain regions, is rated as not empirically supported for epilepsy. Although preliminary studies suggest that connectivity training may have potential benefits, the evidence is limited and lacks the rigor needed for clinical recommendations. This underscores the importance of adhering to well-established protocols, such as SMR and SCP training, which have demonstrated efficacy in managing epilepsy. Despite its promise, neurofeedback is not a standalone solution for epilepsy. It is most effective when integrated into a comprehensive treatment plan that includes medication, lifestyle modifications, and psychological support. Additionally, neurofeedback requires significant time and financial investment, with typical protocols involving 30 to 50 sessions. Individual variability in response also highlights the need for personalized approaches and ongoing research to refine treatment protocols. The classification of SMR and SCP neurofeedback as efficacious and probably efficacious, respectively, underscores their potential to transform epilepsy management. These interventions offer a non-invasive, low-risk alternative to traditional treatments, addressing the complex and multifaceted nature of epilepsy. As research continues to advance, neurofeedback is poised to become a cornerstone of personalized care for individuals living with this challenging condition. Anxiety disorders. Diagnostic criteria. Anxiety disorders encompass a spectrum of mental health conditions characterized by excessive fear, worry, or nervousness associated with behavioral avoidance that impairs daily functioning. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-5, categorizes anxiety disorders into subtypes, including generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, panic disorder, PD, social anxiety disorder, and specific phobias. While these disorders share core features of heightened arousal and distress, they differ in their triggers and symptom patterns. GAD, for instance, involves persistent worry across various domains, whereas PD is characterized by recurring, unexpected panic attacks coupled with concern about future episodes. Diagnosis requires symptoms to persist for at least 6 months and cause significant impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning. Assessment tools such as the Hamilton Anxiety Rating Scale, HAMA, or State Trait Anxiety Inventory, SDAI, are frequently employed to differentiate normal anxiety responses from clinically significant disorders. Accurate diagnosis ensures appropriate and effective treatment tailored to the individual's specific symptoms and needs. Demographics. Anxiety disorders are among the most common mental health conditions, affecting nearly 18% of adults and 25% of adolescents annually in the United States. Women are disproportionately affected, with prevalence rates nearly double those of men. Factors contributing to this disparity include biological, hormonal, and sociocultural influences. Anxiety disorders frequently begin in childhood or adolescence, making early intervention critical to mitigate long-term impacts. While anxiety disorders occur across demographic groups, certain populations are at heightened risk. These include individuals with a family history of anxiety, those exposed to chronic stress or trauma, and individuals with comorbid conditions such as depression or substance use disorders. Additionally, cultural differences in symptom expression and help-seeking behavior influence diagnosis and treatment outcomes, highlighting the importance of culturally sensitive approaches to care. Neurofeedback studies. Neurofeedback, NFB, has emerged as an effective intervention for anxiety disorders, targeting dysregulated brainwave activity associated with heightened arousal and impaired emotional regulation. Evidence-based practice in biofeedback and neurofeedback, 4th edition, rates neurofeedback for generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, as efficacious. This rating reflects the strength of evidence supporting neurofeedback's use for these conditions. For GAD, neurofeedback protocols often focus on enhancing alpha brainwave activity, linked to relaxation, and reducing beta activity, associated with hyperarousal. Studies such as Rice et al., 1993, demonstrated that alpha enhancement neurofeedback significantly reduced trait anxiety and improved psychosomatic symptoms in individuals with GAD. These findings support its classification as efficacious, indicating reliable and meaningful symptom improvement across multiple studies. Clinical efficacy. The classification of neurofeedback as efficacious for GAD reflects its well-established role in treating this condition. Neurofeedback helps normalize brainwave activity, promoting a state of relaxed alertness that counteracts the hyperarousal characteristic of GAD. Participants often report reduced worry, improved emotional regulation, and enhanced overall well-being. These benefits frequently extend beyond the treatment period, highlighting neurofeedback's potential as a durable intervention. By training individuals to regulate brainwave activity and autonomic responses, neurofeedback breaks the cycle of anticipatory anxiety and panic symptoms. Participants typically experience fewer and less severe panic attacks, along with improved confidence in managing their symptoms. These outcomes position neurofeedback as a highly effective and targeted treatment for panic disorder. Limitations and future directions. Despite its effectiveness, neurofeedback is not without limitations. Treatment outcomes can vary depending on individual factors such as symptom severity, neurophysiological profiles, and adherence to protocols. Additionally, neurofeedback requires a significant time commitment, with most protocols involving 20 to 50 sessions to achieve meaningful improvements. These barriers underscore the need for individualized treatment plans and ongoing research to optimize the efficiency and accessibility of neurofeedback interventions. The robust efficacy rating for GAD highlights neurofeedback's potential to transform anxiety treatment. For GAD, its efficacious classification reflects its broad utility. As research continues to refine neurofeedback applications, this intervention holds the promise of further advancing the treatment of anxiety disorders and improving the quality of life for individuals navigating these challenging conditions. Depression. Diagnostic criteria. Depression, clinically referred to as major depressive disorder, MDD, is a common and debilitating mental health condition characterized by persistent sadness, lack of interest or pleasure in activities, and a range of cognitive, emotional, and physical symptoms. According to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-5, a diagnosis of MDD requires the presence of at least 5 symptoms over a 2-week period. These symptoms include depressed mood, diminished interest, significant weight or appetite changes, sleep disturbances, psychomotor agitation or retardation, fatigue, feelings of worthlessness or guilt, difficulty concentrating, and recurrent thoughts of death or suicide. MDD is further classified into subtypes based on specific features, such as melancholic, atypical, or seasonal patterns. Melancholic depression involves profound loss of pleasure and excessive guilt, while atypical depression is characterized by mood reactivity and hypersomnia. Accurate diagnosis involves thorough clinical assessment and standardized tools, such as the Beck Depression Inventory, BDI, or the Hamilton Depression Rating Scale, HAMD, to evaluate symptom severity and track treatment progress. Demographics. Depression is one of the leading causes of disability worldwide, affecting approximately 8% of adults in the United States annually. It is more prevalent among women than men, with hormonal, social, and cultural factors contributing to this disparity. Depression is also most common in young adults aged 18 to 25, highlighting the importance of addressing mental health during this critical developmental period. Socioeconomic factors, such as unemployment, poverty, and limited access to healthcare, increase the risk of depression. Additionally, depression frequently co-occurs with other conditions, such as anxiety disorders, substance use disorders, and chronic illnesses, which can complicate treatment and worsen outcomes. Understanding these demographic and contextual factors is essential for developing effective, individualized interventions. Neurofeedback studies. Neurofeedback, NFB, has emerged as a promising intervention for depression, leveraging real-time monitoring of brainwave activity to help individuals regulate neural patterns associated with mood. Evidence-based practice in biofeedback and neurofeedback, 4th edition, classifies neurofeedback for depression as efficacious and specific, reflecting the robust evidence base supporting its use. This classification indicates consistent positive outcomes across multiple high-quality studies, demonstrating neurofeedback's ability to address the core symptoms of depression. One of the most widely studied neurofeedback protocols for depression involves alpha asymmetry training. This approach targets the imbalance between left and right frontal alpha activity, a pattern commonly observed in individuals with depression. Increased left frontal alpha activity, associated with decreased approach motivation, is normalized through training, promoting greater emotional balance and resilience. Early studies by Baer et al., 1997, demonstrated significant reductions in depressive symptoms following alpha asymmetry training, findings that have been replicated in subsequent research. Real-time functional magnetic resonance imaging, RTFMRI, neurofeedback represents another cutting-edge approach for treating depression. This modality enables individuals to modulate activity in specific brain regions, such as the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, which is implicated in mood regulation. Studies by Linden et al., 2012, showed that participants trained to upregulate these regions experienced significant improvements in mood and reductions in depressive symptoms, supporting the efficacious and specific rating for this intervention. Clinical efficacy. The designation of neurofeedback for depression as efficacious and specific underscores its ability to address both the cognitive and physiological aspects of the disorder. Alpha asymmetry training, for example, not only reduces symptoms of sadness and hopelessness, but also enhances motivation and goal-directed behavior. Participants often report improved emotional stability, greater energy, and increased engagement in daily activities, outcomes that contribute to overall quality of life. Clinical studies have consistently demonstrated neurofeedback's efficacy in reducing depression severity. A randomized controlled trial by Choi et al., 2011, found that participants receiving alpha asymmetry neurofeedback experienced significant reductions in HAM-D and BDI scores compared to a placebo group. These improvements persisted beyond the treatment period, highlighting neurofeedback's potential for long-term benefits. Additionally, neurofeedback is non-invasive and free from the side effects commonly associated with pharmacological treatments, making it an attractive option for individuals seeking alternative therapies. Real-time fMRI neurofeedback offers another layer of precision in treating depression. By enabling participants to indirectly influence neural activity by increasing the BOLD, blood oxygen level dependent, signal in regions associated with positive effect and reward, RTFMRI enhances emotional regulation and cognitive flexibility. Studies by Young et al., 2014, demonstrated that participants who successfully increased activation in the left amygdala reported significant improvements in mood and reduced anxiety, further validating neurofeedback's efficacy and specificity. Integration and limitations. While neurofeedback is a highly effective intervention for depression, it is most beneficial when integrated into a comprehensive treatment plan. Combining neurofeedback with psychotherapy, lifestyle modifications, and, when necessary, medication can address the multifaceted nature of depression. For instance, Alpha asymmetry training can complement cognitive behavioral therapy by enhancing participants' ability to engage in cognitive restructuring and emotional processing. However, neurofeedback is not without limitations. Treatment outcomes can vary based on individual factors, such as baseline symptom severity, neurophysiological profiles, and adherence to training protocols. Additionally, neurofeedback requires a significant time commitment, with most protocols recommending 20 to 50 sessions to achieve meaningful improvements. These challenges highlight the need for personalized approaches and ongoing research to optimize neurofeedback delivery. The efficacious and specific classification for neurofeedback reflects its robust evidence base and transformative potential in depression treatment. As research continues to refine protocols and expand accessibility, neurofeedback is poised to play an increasingly central role in managing this complex and pervasive condition. By addressing the underlying neural mechanisms of depression, neurofeedback offers hope for sustained recovery and improved quality of life for individuals navigating this challenging disorder. Tinnitus. Diagnostic criteria. Tinnitus is a condition characterized by the perception of ringing, buzzing, or other sounds in the absence of an external auditory source. It affects millions of people globally, with prevalence increasing with age and exposure to noise. Tinnitus can be classified as subjective, heard only by the patient, or objective, a rare form detectable by others. While the exact mechanisms are not fully understood, tinnitus is believed to result from abnormal neural activity within the auditory pathway or brain regions involved in sound processing. Diagnosis is primarily clinical and involves a detailed patient history, audiological testing, and assessments to rule out underlying medical conditions. Tinnitus is often associated with hearing loss, particularly in cases caused by prolonged noise exposure or ototoxic medications. The condition varies widely in severity. For some, it is a mild annoyance, while for others, it significantly impairs quality of life, contributing to anxiety, depression, and sleep disturbances. Accurate diagnosis is critical to determine the severity and guide treatment decisions. Demographics. Tinnitus affects an estimated 10 to 15% of the global population, with about 20% of these individuals experiencing significant distress. It is more common in older adults and individuals exposed to high levels of occupational or recreational noise. Veterans and individuals with hearing loss due to noise trauma are particularly at risk. While tinnitus occurs across all demographic groups, its impact can be disproportionately severe in individuals with pre-existing mental health conditions, such as anxiety or depression, due to the bidirectional relationship between these conditions and tinnitus severity. Neurofeedback studies. Neurofeedback, NFB, has emerged as a potential intervention for tinnitus, targeting the neural dysregulation associated with the condition. Evidence-based practice in biofeedback and neurofeedback, 4th edition, rates neurofeedback for tinnitus as probably efficacious when incorporating specific protocols such as alpha and theta enhancement or real-time fMRI feedback. These protocols aim to normalize aberrant brainwave activity in the auditory cortex and related neural networks implicated in tinnitus perception. Studies by Dorman et al., 2007, demonstrated that neurofeedback protocols designed to modulate alpha and theta power in the auditory cortex led to significant reductions in tinnitus severity and distress. Similarly, Crocetti et al., 2010, found that real-time fMRI neurofeedback helped participants downregulate activity in auditory processing regions, resulting in improved symptom management. These findings, while promising, require further replication and standardization to strengthen their evidence base. Clinical efficacy. The classification of neurofeedback for tinnitus as probably efficacious reflects its demonstrated ability to reduce distress and improve quality of life in individuals with moderate to severe symptoms. Participants undergoing neurofeedback often report decreased loudness and intrusiveness of tinnitus, along with improved emotional regulation and sleep quality. The intervention's non-invasive nature and minimal side effects make it a particularly appealing option for individuals seeking alternatives to conventional treatments, such as masking devices or cognitive behavioral therapy. Other neurofeedback approaches, such as connectivity-based training, are rated as possibly efficacious for tinnitus, indicating early but limited evidence. Preliminary studies suggest that these protocols may enhance outcomes by targeting network-level dysfunctions in the brain. However, additional research is needed to establish their clinical utility and refine protocols for widespread application. Limitations and future directions. While neurofeedback shows promise as a treatment for tinnitus, it is not a standalone solution. The variability in treatment outcomes highlights the importance of individualized approaches and integrating neurofeedback with other interventions, such as sound therapy or psychological support. Furthermore, the time-intensive nature of neurofeedback, often requiring 20 to 50 sessions, can pose barriers to accessibility for some individuals. The ratings of probably efficacious and possibly efficacious reflect the current state of evidence for neurofeedback in tinnitus management. As research continues to explore and validate these approaches, neurofeedback has the potential to become a key component of multidisciplinary care for tinnitus, offering hope for improved outcomes and quality of life for individuals affected by this challenging condition. Conclusion. We reviewed neurofeedback's role in addressing diverse conditions, including ADHD, traumatic brain injury, TBI, substance use disorder, SUD, epilepsy, anxiety disorders, depression, and tinnitus. Across these conditions, neurofeedback emerges as a versatile, evidence-based intervention that targets underlying neural dysregulation, offering non-invasive and durable symptom relief. The distinctions in efficacy ratings from efficacious and specific to probably efficacious underscore the varying levels of empirical support for neurofeedback, reflecting both its established success in certain domains and the need for further research in others. Neurofeedback's efficacy is most robust in conditions like ADHD, epilepsy, and depression, where decades of research demonstrate consistent and clinically significant outcomes. For disorders such as SUD, anxiety, and tinnitus, evidence supports its use as an adjunctive treatment, with targeted protocols showing promise in reducing core symptoms and improving quality of life. Importantly, neurofeedback's non-invasive nature, minimal side effects, and potential for sustained benefits position it as a valuable alternative or complement to traditional pharmacological and behavioral therapies, particularly for individuals seeking holistic or personalized approaches. Despite its promise, neurofeedback is not without limitations. Individual variability in response, the time commitment required for treatment, and the need for standardization across protocols highlight areas for ongoing research and development. As the evidence base continues to grow, neurofeedback is poised to expand its role in clinical practice, offering transformative potential for individuals across a wide range of neurological and psychological conditions. By addressing the neural mechanisms underpinning these disorders, neurofeedback represents a significant step toward more integrative and patient-centered care.